everybody. Welcome to episode 121 of
11 times 11.
Spit and Chicklets, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka. There's our special little mathematician, Rain Man, in the corner. Say hi to him for us. Ryan Whitney, what's going on, brother?
How are you? It's happy Halloween to everyone out there. What a day it's been.
Halloween, that's right, too. Mikey Grinnelli, I don't see you dressed up. No festivities down in New York tonight?
I do. He's an Italian little Guinea little blowout New York City kid.
No, my question is, you know, happy Halloween, boys, but Biz, do you take special exception to this holiday because, like, you permanently inked it on your arms?
I do like Halloween. I just haven't had the ability to celebrate in a few years because I've been working my dick off. And obviously now we got the podcast, so I have basically another full-time job, especially with putting RA on my back every episode. but look at Witt's just ready to chime in, so I'll hand it off.
No, honestly, if you have a pumpkin on your arm for life via tattoo, you would think today would be your Super Bowl.
I know. It's pathetic.
I feel like you should just be like jumping out of the bushes at people, and then like you're like, dude, I got a pumpkin on my arm as a tattoo. They'd be like, oh, I get it, man. I understand.
Oh, yeah. Free cover charge. honestly, I think it doesn't matter how much money I ever make. I'll still be considered white trash considering I have a jack-o'-lantern on my wrist.
Jack Assel Lanton.
Or should I say five of them. Whit, what was it your kid's first Halloween?
Oh, yeah. Took him to three houses. I actually took a lot of heat tonight because the first house, well, actually all the houses, you know, I would just grab the candy. And I took Milk Duds one time. My wife was all over me calling me a piece of shit. Is Milk Duds that bad of a choice?
They do get shit on. I like them myself, but people think they're trash.
I know they're fucking trash.
Oh, fucking South Shore boy over here.
are those the ones with the caramel in the middle?
Yeah, they're phenomenal, yeah. I think. Great. But I should call you. She looked at me. She goes, you're a piece of shit for taking those.
I'm a huge
fan. Supposed to say that? And then her friend was agreeing with me. Either way, it was pretty cool. Yeah, you know, it's a good neighborhood I live in with the kids just running around. Made me just remember back to the time I was like Mike Greenwell from the Red Sox. I'd pretend to slide into first base. That was like my costume.
Yeah, we got a little more Halloween shit later when we do All Right Hand.
Oh, yeah.
We got a bunch of Halloween.
Yeah, we broke up your intro. Sorry, buddy.
That's all right. Yeah, and our fourth member, Paul Bissonnette. Welcome.
Oh, I never got the intro. I mean, Whit, you sound like you're pretty perky tonight.
Oh, I mean, I feel phenomenal right now. I really
do. Yeah, you sound great, energetic, and
I saw the bookie today, and I just crushed that Sox series. Congratulations to us, Grinnelli and Rear Admiral. We're world champions. That's our 11th title since 2001, I believe. So to be from Boston is a special feeling, and when you win money, I mean, I don't know how local bookies have been in business the last 11 years around here. So congrats to us and the Boston Red Sox, because it's just special.
Hey, listen, I don't have a skin in the game. I could care either way, and I don't really like baseball, but like to do what you guys have done in this short period of time,
it's insane.
In today's age, with how many teams there are too, and the parity. I mean, I get that baseball, there's no salary cap, so like Boston's usually going to be always pretty decent. But I mean, Christ, boys.
Boston will always be. I mean, they got the highest payroll. I just think that it'll never happen again. What's gone on in the city of Boston?
It's the greatest sports city of all time.
And the craziest thing is the Patriots are thought of as this dynasty. They are. They have five titles since 2001. Well, the Sox now have four since 2004. So they're right there. The Patriots are a little bigger in Massachusetts now. I don't know if you guys agree with that.
Definitely.
People are going to hate the beginning of this podcast, but I just love it. And I don't know. I don't think that this will ever really happen again. It's been the fact that there's like my grandfather and so many people's grandfathers or fathers or, you know, whatever, never saw titles or were 60 years old before they saw their first title. And now there's 11. It's just like.
I don't want to take anything away from sports teams who won championships when there was like six teams in the league, but it's a little more relevant now. Can we agree on that?
Like I
you have like a couple good players who are just like so elite there's six teams in the league. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, the Yankees won all those titles. There weren't even, like, black players in the league. Like, you know, you got to think about that a little bit. But I think in 50 years, people will still look at these titles not the same as they look. You know what I mean? It's like inflation in terms of
I think
in 60 to 70 years, people will be like, those teams suck because the sport will be so different.
You think that there's going to be – I guarantee you – there will never be another greater quarterback than Tom Brady ever in the NFL by the time he retires. And I don't even like the Patriots. I'm an Aaron Rodgers fan. How the fuck can you – and, man, how many times has he been to the finals? Seven?
Yeah. No, he's lost three eight. Super Bowls. He's been there eight, and then he's lost a couple AFC titles games. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But, you know – but you, dude, I'm telling you, people look at, like, Johnny Unitas or, like, it just – as time passes – people lose respect for what those guys did.
Well, not with technology that there is now. There's enough video to
although maybe Brady's different because I think in 50 years, people will be like, oh, Tiger and Jack Nicklaus, like those numbers are unbeatable. So who knows? But let's get into a little hockey. I'm sorry for
that. We
almost deserve to gloat.
We have like three listeners right now.
Everyone,
so congrats to the ones who made it.
Yeah, and I'll get blamed for bringing it up, too.
No, we won't blame RA on this one. We'll blame RA when we talk about the Bruins' third PK forward
unit. Yeah, and speaking of first story, Charlie McAvoy is on the injured reserve list. That was a perfect fucking segue.
Can you say that without spitting and laughing into the mic, please?
Okay, Mom. Sorry, I laughed. It was fucking funny. No, Charlie McAvoy, we're going over not a lot of news since Sunday. There wasn't a lot that went on, but Charlie McAvoy, he took a thump up in Edmonton a few weeks ago. The Bruins put him on injured reserve list, talking about it as an upper body. A lot of scarce about the information, not much known. We're not going to speculate here. I'm assuming it's unrelated to his heart issue. That's technically the upper body. Go ahead, Grinelli.
Did you guys see Charlie McAvoy's Halloween costume?
No, what did he go with?
Unbelievable. He went as Chaz Michael Michaels. Him and his girlfriend went as the guys from Blades of Glory. And he went as Chaz Michael Michaels. And A+++.
Ooh,
Post it on the Instagram. I'm sure
already posted.
Don't ask for doing too much Boston Bruins stuff.
Already posted.
Wow, I got to check that out. There's a couple other injuries, isn't there?
Actually, one other big news from the injured reserve. Pekka Rinne came off the injured reserve list. He could start as early as, well, tonight, Thursday, in Tampa Bay. He had a pretty nice start, a 2.10 goals against, .929 save percentage. UC Saros did a tremendous job while he was out. Didn't you catch him, Witz, in a few games? You said you were watching him.
I mean, yeah, this guy, it's kind of – it makes Nashville even that much better, the fact that when you have a backup goalie who's that good, depending on injury, and even if Rinne had been healthy the whole year, you know, you get this guy 25, 28 starts, and you can rely on him every time. So he's been great since Rene's been out. They kind of are very fortunate to have two guys, no matter what goes on with injury and or, you know, hot and cold play.
And Saros ain't making a boatload of dough either, can spend it other places. Boys, another injury in the goal. Johnny Quick down and with a meniscus. From what I read, indefinite. Yeah, so that's another big blow to the Kings. Kings Twitter kind of overreacting, saying they need to go out and get a goalie. They made a move this offseason to bring Peter Budaj back. He was originally with LA, started in the minors, ended up coming up. But I played with both him and Jack Campbell, so they'll be sharing the duty in LA now. A very good tandem, very good buddies too. I'll credit Dusty Emu, a little shout out to our goalie coach who was in the American League, worked with both these guys. When Budaj was there in 2015, 2016, he didn't win a game the year before. He was in
all year?
Nova Scotia. He had a disastrous year. And this guy played some NHL games. He played in Colorado. He played in Montreal a little bit. But he went down
in the minors.
But he struggled. He struggled mightily, and he couldn't find his confidence. Ends up coming over to Ontario. I believe he was on a PTO to start the year. Dusty Emu worked with him, helped with his confidence. He ended up finishing that year. I think he was goaltender of the year and runner-up for MVP. He had 42 wins. He had a 1.75 goals against average in the American League and a .932 save percentage. He was, of course, an all-star. And then the year after is when Jack Campbell came over from Dallas. He was a first rounder. 11th overall in the 2010 draft. Never really found his game with the Stars organization. He only ended up getting one NHL game, but he ended up coming over in when was it here? I got the Ontario 2016-2017. Dusty Emu helped him out as well. He had a 2.52 goals against average with a 914 save percentage. He had 31 wins that year, and he was an all-star as well. So credit to the goalie coach in the American League for the Ontario Reign, and now, of course, Bill Ranford, who's been helping them out as well at the NHL level. So they got a couple good guys to help out Johnny Quick.
Yeah, but that team, I mean, they're in trouble, dude. They have played very poorly. They can't really score. They've had trouble with every part of their game, giving up shots, and now they lose, I mean, a star goalie. So, you know, all of a sudden, you could look at them in 3 weeks and they're pretty much could be out of the playoffs. Thanksgiving's kind of the number or the time of the year when you look, and I don't know the percentages, but I'd be surprised. I bet you it's the teams in the playoffs at Thanksgiving around, I'm going to make a guess here. Let's see how off or on I am. 65-70% maybe are the ones who end up making the playoffs. So that's a pretty good number in terms of knowing where you stand once the end of November comes.
That's pretty fair. One other thing I wanted to bring up is I've been getting asked this, and we have as well on the Spit and Chicklets Twitter. What does money on the board mean? For those of you who don't play hockey, or I guess even professional, because that's where it starts anyway.
Yeah.
Is money on the board is like for a guy who's going to be playing against his old team, or like it's his first ever game, or it's this, a milestone. He hit 500 games or 200 games. Well, you put up money on the board, and if the team ends up winning, it goes into the fine fund for the next team party, whether it's the Halloween party, end of the year party. Always need some help at rookie parties. We know how those go. Usually you go over budget. So for instance, if I played my 200th NHL game, I would have put probably, you know, $50 on the board. Nah, usually you match the number at least 200. If you go below 100.
No, is it like five now?
Well, if you go below 100 at the National Hockey League level, you're a piece of trash. I would probably set it at 200. 200 is a fair number.
If you had two digits on money on the board in the NHL, you'd be booed straight out of the locker room.
Oh, yes. With that many, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. You I think better I'd have
put,
at least three.
I'd probably put 250. But keep in mind, when you're making league minimum with escrow and agency fees, if you're making 600, you're making like, I don't know, maybe just under three. It's not that much money, especially someone who doesn't have an education.
Well, especially someone who's going to rip it up all summer and spend like 50K in July going to Vegas 16 times like yourself. I actually remember thinking – putting big money on the board, and then if the team, if you won, and then, you know, you got to pay the fine, not the fine, you know, you got to pay your due. I just remember always thinking to myself, like, at these team parties, I am going to get my money's worth. I'm going to crush drinks because my money's in there anyways.
Couple Opus ones to go, please.
How are you? Open them up. You don't even need to open them up. Take them out the door. You got Camus?
You put those in a to-go bag, please.
One other note, too, guys. We always mention it late. Kelly Chase, longtime St. Louis Blue, longtime tough guy. He'll be joining the podcast a little later for an interview. You guys did. What are we looking forward to there, boys?
Oh, we're looking forward to some funny stories from a guy who I think he basically was everyone's favorite teammate. You know, if you ask anyone who played with him, they all love Chaser. And it same goes for the younger guys now in the league. A lot of guys around St. Louis that he's been, working with when he does the TV or the radio, whatever he had done. And people just love being around him. So he was gracious to come on with us. And Biz made a good point of bringing up. We go into it a little bit in the interview, but Kelly Chase was a huge part of the recovery for the after that Humboldt Broncos bus crash. I believe he played for the Humboldt Broncos. I think that we do a good job going into the fact of how much, you know, how hard that was for him and how much they've been able to try to do and help out. So it was a good one.
Yeah, credit to him. He played with Tyson Nash, who's helped me immensely in the media part of my career. Tyson Nash in his first training camp with the Blues took a run at Pavel Dimitra and he clobbered him in the middle of the ice and ended up separating his shoulder in training camp. That's how savage training camps were back then. And Kelly Chase went over and Nasher was trying to go change, and Kelly Chase was like, I'm gonna fucking kill you. And the coach for like the inter squad game wouldn't let Nasher change. He's like, nope, go back out there. And he had to fight Kelly Chase. And Tyson Nash ended up saying, hey, ask Chaser about the time I beat him up in training camp, like jokingly, because Kelly Chase was one tough customer, and I think he fed him pretty good. But Tyson Nash ended up making the team at a camp. So that was one story I forgot to bring up in the interview. It was unbelievable. And before we get there, a few more things to touch on. Jason Spezza, another guy who's hit the 1,000 games. Holy shit. We got a lot of 1,000 games guys here.
I know. Three in the last month.
Yeah. When I play with the Coyotes, I believe we had 5 or 6 guys to hit 1,000 games in my 5 years there.
Hey, that's so expensive. That's expensive.
Oh, God.
Because guys, you know, get some pretty cool gifts for 1,000 games. In Anaheim, the fellas sent Horkoff and his wife to a sick winery in Napa for like 3-4 nights. Like, nice gifts. So, Biz, you were probably like, are you fucking kidding me? I got 3 games. I got to pay this guy to go on a 1,000 game trip.
Every year I was there, there was one guy who hit 1,000 game. I think Steve Sullivan hit it with us, Derek Morris, Adrian Acoin, Shane Doan, and there's 2 other guys. And every time it happens, it's $1,000.
Yeah.
The whole team puts $1,000 in the pot, and they end up getting them like a watch or something sentimental. Of course, they got Shane Doan like a big embroidered saddle for his horses. And I think they ended up getting Stan Wilson the same one when he hit 15 games as a trainer. But very, very cool gifts.
Keith Yandel's just going to ask for like Jordans. Pairs of Jordans.
But Jason Spezza, boys, pretty good career. I mean, he obviously started in Ottawa, lit it up. They had that magical cup run when they just fell short the 1 year. And a great career.
Oh, my God. Remember how filthy this guy was, dude? Not was. I mean, he's coming towards, I guess, the end of his career. Probably a couple more years. But, oh, my God. I mean, this was second overall pick. It was similar to Bouwmeester. Growing up, he was going to be the first overall pick, and Kovalchuk came out of nowhere and kind of caught fire in international tournaments, ended up being the first pick in 2001. But Spezza, from the time he got into the league, his skill was unmatched by a lot of people. I think to a goal, he scored against Sheldon Surrey. He walked him in overtime one time, one of the sickest Spezza moves. And I know I always bring up the lockout in 2004-05. Look at his numbers that year. He played in Binghamton, and he had a season.
He had 117 points that year.
The league was phenomenal. He led the scoring by a mile. So just an incredible playmaker, sick vision, has the toe drag of the ability to drag it out there. He's 6'3", 6'4", pull it in, has a better shot than people realize, but an incredible career and a guy that from the time he's 15 years old, was kind of always looked upon and you know, people would talk about this kid's going to be an NHL superstar, and he was.
He played double underage in the OHL. So
2 years up, yeah. He was just the biggest deal in Canada, I thought.
Yeah, played for the Canadian national team when he was 16. The World Juniors, I should say, when he was 16. He was one of the guys who had a cage out there.
Yeah, Paul, he also had 326 goals, 570 assists for 896 points in 1,000 games. And there's a stat we don't really talk about a lot of people in general, is points per game. And I think that's a really good indicator of how much of an impact the guy had through his whole career. And Jason Spezza, 0.90 points per game, a little bit under 1 point per game. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, nowadays that's unbelievable.
Yeah, this guy, he was a playmaker, absolute playmaker.
Boys, another cool stat I have for you moving away from Spezza, so congrats on that 1,000 games. Sebastian Aho for the Carolina Hurricanes, I hope I said his name properly, he's tied Wayne Gretzky and Ken Linesman's?
Linesman.
The rat. Linesman. The original rat.
I didn't know how to say his name. He tied the record of a 12-game point streak to start an NHL season. So he's got 4 goals and 13 assists for 17 points right now, a big reason why they've been doing pretty decent and getting a good start there in Carolina. But that's pretty remarkable.
Super, super remarkable.
The other Sebastian Aho is probably pissed off.
And he's from Sweden too. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Sebastian Aho. I don't know if the other one, is he still in the league? Is he playing in league? Who knows? He's not the level of player that the Finnish Sebastian Aho is.
Well, and speaking of Scandinavia, the world premier games in Finland kick off tomorrow. They're playing back-to-back, I believe, Grinnell.
Yeah.
And it's going to be between the Florida Panthers and the Winnipeg Jets. Of course, Barkov, who I thought was Russian up until hearing he was from Finland a few days
ago. Alexander Barkov doesn't exactly scream Finland.
No, and then Patrick Laine are kind of the headliners to it. They're playing off it. Grinnell, if you could play the clip of the weird Finnish reporter question to Paul Maurice so everyone can hear it.
So do you expect Laine to show Barkov who's the daddy here in Finland?
Whoa. So welcome to Europe, eh? I never get asked a question like that. First of all, I'm not even sure what that means. I'm old. I think it'll be a great contest.
RA, I mean, you're the journalist here. I mean, they don't ask questions like that in North America.
No, actually, I thought it might have been in North America at first, just because of the phrase and the who's your daddy thing. That seems like more of like a North American thing. I remember when Pedro Martinez, here we go, Boston again. When Pedro Martinez was talking about the Yankees and my daddy, I guess we'll have to call him my daddy. That's like, I think, the first time I ever heard it in a sporting context. But yeah, it was a Finnish coach asking Paul Maurice, which is pretty funny. But let me ask you guys, man, I can't imagine these players are too happy about having to go over to Finland, and it's November already. Today's November, and they got to go to Finland, not even to start the season. It's like a month in. That must be a real pain in the ass for these guys, no?
Well, wait, you talked to Jans, didn't you?
Yeah, he said it was, you know, it's just tough with the time change, right? I mean, you get over there and you don't have that much time. I think it's cool. Once you get into the game, it's always fun to break up, you know, the long season, do something a little different. But the travel, the amount of time you're in the plane, and then, you know, trying to get back to East Coast time when they do arrive home to play games at home, it'll be annoying and a little tough. I know Helsinki, though, if you can speak English, you're like Justin Timberlake there. So I'm sure that they'll have some fun. I don't know if they'll get to go out even. They might take off right after the game, but I think it'll be all right. It's annoying, but it's also pretty cool to break up, like I said, a long season.
Yeah, I just think at the beginning of the season, it's nice. You go there, you can have like your a mini training camp before it starts.
Yeah, usually, I like it better then.
When we did it both times, we ended up playing a team from overseas. Whether we were playing in Sweden, we went over to Finland for an exhibition game. But right during the middle of the season, I don't know. It's a tough way. It's a tough way to get back, get adjusted. The time change, throw you off for about a week and a half. But boys, I think that's good enough for pre-talk. We're going to send it to Kelly Chase. Unbelievable interview. So hope you guys enjoy that. And we'll bring it back with some parody talk.
This interview is brought to you by Thursday Boots. Do you prefer clunky work boots or delicate fashion boots? Cheap boots that fall apart after a few wears, or shelling out $400 or more for a pair of boots to get you through the winter months? Well, here's something that you might not know. There is another option. That's where Thursday Boot comes in. Thursday Boot Company, a 3-year-old bootstrap startup that has been shaking up the industry by making really ridiculously high-quality boots that they sell direct to consumer at unbeatable prices. No joke. The brand started in 2014, and the name Thursday came about because on Thursday you work hard, but it's also the unofficial start of the weekend. Thursday boots are made with that versatility in mind. Durable enough to take a serious beating and sophisticated enough to clean up for a date and looking good out at the bar. Thursday boots are built for people who understand quality and want a good-looking pair of boots that will last a few seasons. Made in the same North American manufacturing facilities as the heritage brands your parents and grandparent wore that sell for two, three times the price of Thursday boots. Thursday boots are not only a better value, but they also use better materials too, like the famous Chromo XL leather from the Horween Tannery in Chicago. That is legit. With prices starting at $149 in free shipping and returns, Thursday boots are the best buy this winter. And with their clean, timeless design and durability, Thursday boots will keep you standing confident for years to come. While they don't do sales or discounts, head on over to ThursdayBoots.com and use the code FREESHIPTODAY. That's free ship today to have a pair on your doorstep by this Thursday. And the 2 in free ship today is just a number.
Well, folks, our next guest has not been on yet, and I've been getting tons of questions.
Tons of requests for this man.
Tons of requests. Oodles.
I'm now
oodles
nervous.
Oodles. He's got over 400 right. NHL games played. Actually, 458 to be exact. This guy was one tough cookie. from Saskatoon. Or no, you're from Saskatchewan, not Saskatoon, but you did play there. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Kelly Chase to the podcast.
How's it going? That's the courtesy clap. That's the golf clap, right?
That's the golf clap for a guy who did not play hockey the way maybe golfers would, like little bitches.
No. Right. Well, you know what we do? We just kind of go out and giggle about it and hit the ball by them.
So you're bullying people on the golf course just like you did on the ice rink?
Just holy.
Hey, Chaser, can we talk quick about Biz asking you to come on and be a great guy and do this interview for us and then being 20 minutes late to it?
Yeah, no, I just told him. I mean, listen, dude, you show up 20 minutes late for warm-up and they just, you know, you're scratched. Is that the deal? Is that the healthy scratch thing you had going?
He was already scratched, though, so it didn't matter.
Yeah. So there was no punishment there. They're like, well, you're not playing anyway, so I guess we just won't playing you. But
hey,
now, saying that,
I got to be honest with you. I've been down that path.
You lasted a lot longer than I did, though. You ended up playing 458 games. That's a shit ton. And obviously, you know, you were in and out of the lineup throughout most of your career, just like I was. But fuck, you must have lasted, what, 12 years in the show?
12, something like that. I was up. I had a little hiccup in the road. I actually started and had a little problem with my hand right out of the gate. I got a little tussle and I got a tooth in my hand and they zippered it up, a little infection. And let me tell you what, boys, I almost had a little, thought I was going to be lopped. I mean, you think I literally, they talk about not having hands. I just literally just about didn't have a hand. I got a little staph infection. Got called up and I got called up and our trainers, I asked him for some peroxide and he said, well, you know how they were then, I grumpy old buggers. And he goes, what the hell do you need peroxide for? I said, I got this cut in my hand. And he goes, what are you talking about? And he looks at my hand. He goes, okay, go get your shit off. I said, what? He goes, go get, you know, imagine you're a kid, your whole life you've dreamt about playing in the NHL. And the second game that I saw live, I was playing in, and I'm about to play my first game in the NHL. And this guy's telling me to take my stuff off. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, you can't play with that hand. And I go, oh, I'm playing. And no, you're not. You're not playing. And I said, oh, no, I'm playing.
And
he said, take your shit off. Went over to the doctors in the back room, and then he just said, Kelly, you can't play. Go take your stuff off. We're going to have an ambulance take you to the hospital. Whoa. They took me to the hospital. They cut my hand open, my left hand open. They drained the staph infection I had going up my arm. They drained it out of my arm. I spent a few days in the hospital. And I never played my first game in the NHL until the following year. And after camp, I was the first guy that got sent down and the first guy that got called up. But it was like I thought my dreams were crushed right out of the gate. I had my one chance to play in the NHL. And I just, you know how it is. You just want one game. And here I end up in the hospital with my hand opened up. So I think I only played about 38 games my first year. And then things started picking up from there a little bit.
So you literally punched someone's teeth in, and then that person's front tooth was stuck in your hand, and they zipped it right up over it?
Well, there was a little bit of it in there, obviously, because it got infected, and they had to open it up. And the weird part about it is kind of disgusting to talk about, but it's literally when they opened it up, and the scar I still have today, it stunk so bad because it was literally – your hand was rotting. So I lost the tendon in the back part of my hand and it was interesting, but I can tell you, I was me and the trainer almost had a tilt in the room in my first game.
That guy must've never brushed his teeth.
I don't remember exactly who it was either, but it was in the minors.
It was a brochure. Did he have the bad gums? Yeah. He had the dinosaur breath.
I don't remember who it was, to be honest with you, but it was we had Twister and I down in Peoria, and we were plenty busy, so I can't remember who it was.
Hey, okay, so crazy story. So I ended up getting a bar fight one night back home in Port Dalhousie, and I ended up knocking this kid out. This is going back way back when. And sure as shit, the same thing happened to me where I got his front teeth, and they cut my hand. Well, fuck, he cut me pretty good. I went home. I'm an idiot. I cleaned it off with Captain Morgan's because I just said, oh, alcohol, you know, it's got to clean the fucking...
Yeah, that'll kill it.
I made my hand a double-double. But it ended up fucking getting infected the next day. I ended up going to St. Catherine's Hospital, and it took me 8 hours to get in. And finally, when the doctor saw it, he goes, "Bud, this thing's infected. We got to get this fucking cleaned out real quick." So they brought a surgeon in. They had to open it up and really clean it. And I ended up being in the hospital for about a week, lost 10 pounds. It's serious.
I don't want to punch anybody in the mouth anymore and infect my hand, but I could use the 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be a bad idea.
Hey, funny you mentioned, you know, back then, early 90s, the trainers, I mean, you could be leaking blood and they'd be like, "Hey, there's Band-Aids over near the shower. Go ahead. You're fine."
I could tell you 100 stories like that. One of my favorites is they used to take and put your hand in the water and put the ultrasound machine in your they take the ultrasound machine, turn it on full blast. They want to know if your hand's broke. You just put your hand down in the water, and then they would stick the ultrasound machine in there. And if it vibrated off the bone and you shot up like you had the electric shock, your hand was broke. So here, we're going to see if your hand's broke. Let's pound sound waves through the broken bone. And then, you know, you'd shoot your arm up and be like, "Oh, yeah, that one's broke. Take him, but you can't play more. You're done. You go to the hospital. You got a broken thumb or something," you know, because they shove the ultrasound right into the water with you. And I mean, you come out of that water. If it didn't affect you, you're like, you're fine. Go back on out there. You know,
it doesn't matter
how swollen it is.
Hey, yeah. Chaser, you walk back to the bench like Frankenstein. You're like,
hey, they're like, "Hey,
put me in, coach."
Hey,
listen, here's the equipment guy's motto. Holly and I were talking about this too. So first thing that happens to me is they give me number 39. Okay. Now I just finished telling you, like, the second game I ever saw live, I was in. Okay. So you're going to give me 0, 105, whatever number you want to give me. I don't give a shit. I'm playing. That's all I care about. So you have this guy, Frankie Burns, is our equipment guy. He goes, I play, and he gives me 39, and I'm sure they're thinking, like, "This guy's terrible. He won't be here long. Let's give him this number available." And we just tacked on the numbers, and I play, and, you know, second game, get into a little fight. Then we got the old Chuck Norris tour, so I got to go through Minnesota, Toronto, Detroit, and it's a circus, right? And I fight, like, 5 times. And so I get back to St. Louis, and he goes, "Hey, kid, come here for a second." Because now he's taking a liking to me. He's like, "Hey, kid, come here." I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Hey, listen, I got a better number for you if you want it." I go, no. I'm fine with this number. I said, besides, you know, I said, I've always, you know, I grew up watching Brian Skrulland and, you know, because he's from Saskatoon. I don't explain all this to him, man. I just go, you know what? I go, "Brian Skrulland wears 39. He looks at me with his stupid look on his face. He goes, "Well, there's fucking something you won't hear every day." my favorite player is Brian Skrulland. He's like, "Jesus, we got to bring this kid."
He's like, "Have you seen the other guys?
He's like, "Aim for the stars,
room, idiot."
I know. And then the second thing that happened was no sticks. I'm telling you, it's November, December, no sticks. Hully comes in one day, and I'm grinding down a Wayne Babbage coho. Wayne Babbage had retired 3 years earlier, and that's what they're giving me to use, okay? Wayne Babbage's co-hos. I'm just grinding this thing down with the rasp. And you know, Holly, how he talks to you, like, "What the hell are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm just fixing a stick." And he goes, "What the hell are you using?" And he goes, "Use mine." And now I've got no sticks, and Brett Hall's got, I don't know, 600, and they're different patterns and different, and you know, he's got a wall of them, right? And he goes, "Here." And he goes, "And by the way, your sticks are too long anyway." And he gives me this stick. Well, I don't have any sticks. So I'm like, "All right, you know, it's Brett Hall. I don't want to say, like, no, I don't want, I can't handle a puck with that curve." And we go down the ice. He's good, huh? Isn't that great? Huh? You can rip it, hey, buddy? And he's just giving me this one. I'm like, Jesus. First of all, it's 6 inches too short. Secondly, the curve, I mean, I'm going to hit, you know, any of our goalies have no chance right now. I could hit Greg Millen in the throat. He's 40. It's kind of a heart attack. And I'm using this stick. So the next day I'm like, yeah. So I fix up the rest of the Wayne Babbage stuff. I come in for the game after a pregame skate. He's thrown them all in the garbage and broke them. And I got to use his sticks. Well, he never taped his sticks. And he curved them, but he never taped them. And he'd rasp them down or whatever. He never taped the knobs on them. And he never taped the blades on them. We had a kid doing it. And until Brett Hall left the St. Louis Blues, I never had a stick. I'd just go to his rack. I'd pull three out, I'd write 39 on them. I'd fire them in my sleeve, and that would be the end of it. I never taped a stick until Brett Hall left St. Louis.
Oh, my God. Because
the trainer's like, this guy's terrible. There's no way.
He bullied you.
He was just honest. No, he was like, but the greatest part about it was is the trainer must have thought this kid's terrible. There's no way he's going to last. So he's not ordering me sticks. He's putting it on the minor league budget. And the second thing is, after I kind of got a liking to the stick, I was like, well, why bother? I got 4 minutes in me tonight. I'll use this. You know, I mean, I'm going to need it for the 3-on-3 tomorrow at practice with the 2-pass at the end of the practice. And that's the game.
Well, I was just going to say, your best stick. Bet is that you're not even going to need it in the end. Like, you know, you didn't need a stick, right? So could have been a fucking broom.
Well, hey, listen, now, how much was your biggest year in the minors?
I saw your IHL year. Holy.
Yeah. I don't compete with you, buddy, but I was a shutdown defenseman. Keep the change.
Let me tell you something. They stuck me on a line with Nelson Emerson 1 year. Nelson Emerson was rookie of the year in the IHL, and David Bruce, and he was MVP. They fired me on a line with those two guys, and we ended up winning the cup that year in Peoria. And I'm going to tell you what, I figured it out. I'll chip the puck to the little guy in the middle, and I'll meet him down there. And I think 60 points close to it that year, 20-some goals. I just stood by the net and knocked him in. And when I figured out the fastest way back to the NHL was to give the little guy in the middle a puck. And, man, when I had that figured out, it was beautiful. Just Bobby Plager had me. Now, they traded Twister in the middle of the year, so I went from, like, not really having to worry about the big guys to having, I think, somewhere over 300 or maybe 400 penalty minutes.
400.
Because 400. Because Twister left. So we had a cool 48 majors or something that year, some goofy number, like,
oh wow.
Just but it was a fun year, man. There's nothing like winning, and I don't care what level you're at, there's nothing like winning.
You were basically like the Dave Semenko of the IHL, him playing with Gretzky, you playing with Bruce and Emerson.
Yeah, you know, I loved Sammy, but I think I might have been a little bit more of a touch. But you know what? He had 20.
Hey, pumping your own fucking tires, eh? I love that.
No. No, listen, I got to tell you something. He was one of the funniest guys and the scariest guy. He got more. I was a rookie, played an exhibition game on him. He gave me a sideways look. That was it. I was like, all right, shut her down, boys. Okay. This is enough of the big fella here.
Okay. All set here.
Chaser.
Yep. Thanks for coming. Yep. Change.
Oh, fuck. Chaser, I don't know whether I want to keep going with the hockey stories or asking what you're up to now, because you left the St. Louis job, I should say.
Yeah. Well, I left the broadcast job, and I'm still working for the Blues a little bit, doing some stuff. And, I love the organization, and I love St. Louis, you know. But I took a job with Discovery Land Properties, which is an amenity community.
Oh, did you?
You know, it's – yeah. I'm doing the Nashville project, so I'm living back and forth Nashville, St. Louis.
Well, Chaser, to bring our fans up to speed, describe what that Discovery Land Group is all about.
Well, they have 21 properties around the world that they the whole motto Mike Meldman had, that he easily developed Casamigos Tequila as well, and they just sold him, Randy Gerber, George Clooney, made a cool $1.2 billion.
Yeah, man, Billy going.
Mike, right, and Mike. Mike figured out that if you reward yourself, life's short. He's big on family, and he's like, look, he wants to have an amenity properties around the world that he thought where you treat yourself to everything you want. If you want, I was reading the amenity deal here in Nashville, so tennis courts, pickleball courts, swimming pools, all of the basics, golf course, whatever. But then the cool things like the snack shacks or what we call comfort stations. On the backs of the property where you just come in and you can, every candy you can imagine, every kind of food you can imagine, tacos, yes. A bar, you help yourself and it's part of the amenity, but also the small things like, hey, we wash your car, we'll go get your laundry, we'll shop your groceries for you. We have a knife sharpener on property. He'll come and sharpen your knives in your kitchen for you if that's what you need. Like, they don't miss anything. So
it's like, look,
you reward yourself for being successful. Life's short. Enjoy it around your family, and we'll take care of the rest. So it's a pretty cool concept, and it's been fun.
Yeah, Ray, I went and saw him at Gauzer. So there's a lot of the hockey boys go to Gauzer in in Idaho.
I'm a member there.
Okay, oh, well, there you go.
I'm a member.
Is Wizard up there? Yeah, the Wizard Whitney?
Yeah, Ray Whitney's there.
The Wiz is there, yeah. Holly, Gretz, Brendan Morrow, Carbonell, Courtnell. Jeez, we got Bobby Ryan, Tyler Johnson are there. Yeah, we got a good group, man.
Hey, Wizard is a complete stick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's solid. He plays 6 days a week up there.
Must be nice, eh? But one thing that you mentioned, though, is like basically like the 24-hour concierge service, where when I was with Surrey, he just got in a new boat. He calls down. He says, hey, get it ready to go. You go down. You drive down with your golf cart down to the docks because you're right on a beautiful lake. They got beers in a little mini fridge. They got a cooler for you. They got all the towels you need. Man, it is top fucking notch. You get treated like royalty.
You pull up to the dock when you're done. They take clean the boat out, clean the boat, take everything. You just walk back up to your top of the mountain on the property. It's a neat. Well, so we went there 6 years ago, my wife and family, and then I became, you know, obviously I was a member. I just got involved with them, and then I got talking to Malcolm, and he's like, you should come and work for me. And I'm like, I got a pretty good job. And then he just ground me for like 3 years ago. I went and said, okay, I'll sit in some sales meetings on Tuesdays. And that was 3 years ago. And then last year I got into it and I kind of crushed it. And then this winter he said, I want you to come to Mexico, to Chileno, and I want to talk to you. And then he just said, listen, smart too. Hey, what grabs my wife and says, Raylan, what would you like? What can we do for you? And then it went from that to what can we do for the kids? Now, Kelly, here's a pad and paper. Write down what it is you need.
And sign
it. It was awesome. I mean, seriously, I can't work for a better guy, a company that's, you know, they're results oriented. They don't get caught up in stuffy shit like you'd see at these golf courses with buttoned up ties and golf shirts and six. Nothing to piss me off.
You could basically play with boxers on. You could play eight guys in an eightsome in with boxers on. They don't give a shit.
Keep up to the pace to play. And here's the other thing. Nothing pisses me off more. You're at these clubs and these people think they've got some, you know, they've got, and by the way, none of these assholes are listening to your show anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Fuck them anyway.
You, I can tell you this, driving like a mile away from the green to park your cart to walk back to putt a ball. Are you shitting me? We're going to make the course. We don't want to wreck the course. Wreck the course. I'm a farmer. Dude, you put enough water on sod, on concrete, it'll grow. You can grow shit like that on the roofs of buildings, and you're worried about the grass going away. Jesus. Park a mile away to the tee box. Park a mile away from the green. Can't stand it. And this place, got to figure it out. Drive up, hit ball, flip-flops, put on your shoes between the first and second hole.
Take a shit on the green.
Well, we don't.
Oh, you can't do that. Oh, okay. I was testing it.
Hey,
I could afford a membership.
Is
not
Baker's
anymore.
Bay one of those properties?
Baker's Bay is one of them, yeah. Oh, in the Bahamas, man, awesome.
That's where Fowler and Spieth are at. I think all the golf fans know about the spring break guys down there. So that discovery, all of that is just incredible. I got to get involved. I can't even afford it, though. It's just really uber rich.
We're going to have to start selling presenting sponsorships on this podcast if we want to even dabble into those fucking, what do you call them, comfort stations? They got any rubbers at those? They supply rubbers?
I'm sure they don't have them at the comfort station, but I'm sure that if you need them on property, they'll find somebody who'll get them for you.
Another thing I'm curious about is kind of what goes along with your name is just guys that play with you love you. There's never been a bad word spoken about you. And one of the teammates that you're really close with now is Wayne Gretzky. And I'm curious, were you friends with him before you ever played with him? And how has your relationship grown to where you're kind of, wherever Wayne is, I feel like you're at.
Oh no, I'm not. I get along great with Wayne. His wife's from St. Louis, so I never actually played with Gretzky. Oh. I got traded. He got traded there and then left, and I came back the year he left. But we've been friends a long time. I've done a lot of stuff with him, but I think it started. You know, we always know that. Obviously, he's the great one, and you've been around, associated with him. Best thing to do, just keep to yourself and do your own thing. And Wayne picks up on that, and he's always taking care of people around him. And then I did a lot of speaking engagements, and I would do a lot of Gordy's events. And when Wayne would be included, and then he started saying to me, "Hey, why don't you come with me and we'll do, you know, we're going to do this event and wherever." So I've done a few events, and I'll give you a quick, this is how he operates. Okay. So he says to me, we're in LA, he goes, "Listen, I need you to come up and do your thing up in Grand Prairie, Alberta." And I go, "Okay, what are we doing?" He goes, "You know, just the, you know, what you do, you know. And I go, "What is it I do?" And, you know, because I do these auctioneer stuff too. And he goes, "You know, just run the question and answer, you know." I said, "Okay." So I'm in LA. He says, "Just meet me at this airport in the morning and we'll go from here. And then I'll get you back to St. Louis when we," so he goes, "You fly with me." So I get to this private airport. We fire up to Grand Prairie, Alberta. Okay. Now we stop in Edmonton, and all of that was an autograph session. It was just like, it wasn't going through customs. It was, "Hey Wayne, can you sign this, 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 and this?" And away we go. So now we land in what is Grand Prairie. And we go from the airport to the hotel, and we throw our bags in the room, and we're going to meet down in the lounge and have something to eat at the bar and some cocktails and bullshit with the people that are there a little bit. So we do that. And I get up in the morning, he's calling me. He goes, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I go, I just got up." He goes, "Come on downstairs to the lobby. You got to come to the restaurant. Come here. Hurry up." And I go, "Everything all right?" He goes, "Just hurry up." So I, you know, go. I get dressed. I go down there. And he goes, "Dude, we're not in Grand Prairie." I go, "What?" He goes, "We're not in Grand Prairie." I go, "Well, where the fuck are we? Like, what do you mean we're not in Grand Prairie?" And he goes, "We're in Fort McMurray." And I go, "Well, are we supposed to be in Fort McMurray?" He goes, "Yeah, we're supposed to be in Fort McMurray. But dude," he goes, "I didn't want you to say something at the luncheon about Grand Prairie." Sure, shit. I had this whole thing about, "Oh yeah, you guys hosted the Royal Bank Cup last year. It was fucking great. My cousin or my nephew played in it," and all this bullshit. You know, "You ever seen the Snickers commercial, not going anywhere for a while? Hey, I go to Cleveland. We're in Detroit." That would have been me, right? "Gretz, yeah, we're in the wrong city." I'm like, "Jesus, dude, where are we?"
Fuck.
So we've had some laughs.
Hey, I'm fascinated by the way he's kind of basically kept a squeaky clean image his entire life. When he does interviews, he's not boring. I always love what he has to say, and he's very articulate. Like, talk about a guy who not only had it on the ice, but did such a good job of marketing himself off the ice. Like, he's a genius in that regard.
No one like him, really. You know, no blemishes. And, you know, you love him for that. And the admiration, obviously, for both sides of it, as you said. You know, he's got a great sense of humor, which a lot of people don't get to see sometimes, because sometimes, you know, he is Switzerland. You know, he really plays that, you know, but
you have to.
So. It has to be, but that's what makes him, hey, listen, you know, you earn your nickname, right? And so he's a great one. And that's the best part about it. And I have to laugh too. Like, you know, a couple of years ago, he won the member guest at Gosser, and he made a putt that was like, I don't know, 30 feet. It just looped too, and it went in the hole. And he put his arms in the air and walked just as it was going in. He's walking right at Dougie Waite and I were sitting on it, leaning on our golf cart, you know, laughing. And if you've been to Gosser, like the member guest, it's the, you know, we're down to the, it's called the horse race, the shootout at the end. And it's music blaring and a bar set up at the end of the green and, you know, a little, you know, kids pool thing. People are sitting in to cool off. Like, it's just a circus. It's fun. You know, like the families are all out there.
How many people are watching them at that putt? How many people are watching that putt?
I'd say 400 or 500, okay? The whole property, okay? He makes the putt, and he walks. He's walking like dead right at us, and he's about 5 feet from us. And he goes, "What? No TVs where you guys grew up?"
Oh, I'm the great one.
So you're in fucking tears at this point. Hook, line, and sinker.
Are you kidding me? We both just pissed ourselves and then just walked away, because what are you going to say? You know? Like, what are you going to say?
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Guest Dustin Johnson, for fuck's sake?
No, his partner was his 15-year-old son at the time.
Oh, Tristan. That kid's a stick, I think, isn't he? Because he works with that.
Yeah, he's going up.
What do you mean at the time?
He was 15 at the time. I think he's 17 I think he's 17 or 18.
I was going to say, did he like disown him or something?
Nah, if you read the headlines, there's someone we might disown in the family. It wouldn't be him.
On that note, let's talk more about the hockey side of your career. Hey, you got to play in Toronto. What was that like?
Well, I played two games. So I often tell people,
a cup of coffee. When I get
up to speak, I often say, you know, I know most of you probably don't know who I am. My name's Kelly Chase. I played in the NHL for 12 years. I played for three teams and I scored for two of them. And the reason that I say it too is because I literally got there and I failed my physical because my knee had, I had surgery on my knee in Hartford and they literally blew my knee up. And it all, like for, I don't know how many months I had a scope done and I was like trying to get better and it was just taking this fluid off it. Well, I had got all this atrophy in it. They traded me and I got to Toronto and I come in the locker room and I go, and you know, Chris Broadhurst, and you knew Broadway, right? He was so efficient with the testing. And he just said, I need to check this leg out. And I had 35% less strength in my right leg than my left. And so they just said, we can't, they tried to rescind the trade and Cliff Fletcher was great. He did the trade. He said, I went up to his office. I said, Cliff, don't send me back there. A, they're leaving Hartford. B, I will work my ass off all summer. I go, I'll play before the, you know, we didn't make the plus. I said, I'll play before the season ends. And I promise you next summer, I will make sure I do whatever it takes to be, you know, to make sure I play for you. And it turned out he got fired that summer. Mike Smith came in and they didn't rescind the trade. I played two games, right? The last two games of the season, I think. And then I went back to camp in Toronto and they traded me back to St. Louis. So I moved into my house, put my old jersey on, went in my stall and was back home again. So it turned out real well for me, but I would have loved to have played for the Leafs. And my father-in-law, who is 94 now, was the biggest Leaf fan. He literally beat me to Toronto. By the time I flew to Toronto, he had taken a flight from Regina, and he was in Toronto. He was smiling. It was just like freaking cat that ate the canary, man. It was awesome. He just was so pumped up that I was going to, you know, play for the Leafs, play for his team. And it turned out I only got to play two games, but pretty cool.
Oh, it's unreal. One thing I definitely wanted to ask you about was the Humboldt stuff. And, you know, I know you played growing up there and then, of course, in Saskatoon with the Blades. So just talk about that.
Well, you know what? I kind of got goosebumps right now when you said that. And I'm actually wearing Humboldt Broncos shirt today, so you bring it up. But I got to tell you, it was you know, there's no playbook for that. You know that. I mean, everybody knows that. It was a terrible tragedy, obviously. But the thing that was tough for me was, I played there. I knew so many of the people involved in it. But on top of it all, I drove that road. I knew they told me where it happened and I knew where it happened. The guy from my hometown lived right at the corner. His son was the Shymansky boy that walked away. So he called his dad, Miles, who I grew up with, and said, you know, you got to get here. And he was there in, you know, 5 minutes, 3 minutes. And I know exactly where it happened. Like, it just, the whole thing was so damn eerie to me. And that knowing the Billet families that lost all of the, you know, three kids. And, you know, the people I knew there, and that, you know, I knew four of the kids. And two of them made it and two of them didn't. And, you know, and it was, we, you know, of course we, you know, we threw the country music concert, and Haley Wickenheiser and Colby Armstrong, Colby called me or sent me a text and Haley called me and said, what are we going to do? I said, I don't know. Give me a minute to think about it. And we were in Denver. I called my buddy from, Global Entertainment Productions and Country Thunder, and they said, listen. I said, listen. So he called one of the guys that the agents, and they were in his tour bus. And I said, this is when he said, let me make a couple of calls and we'll call you back. And he called me back and he said, hey, we got, you know, five people and, you know, the Hunter Brothers, Kiss. We just had a great grouping of guys. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, we're talking about having a concert in Saskatoon and we did the concert. Now, you want to know how great hockey players are. It was one of the most emotional things I've ever been a part of in my life. Well, first of all, Dana, who was the trainer, her mom called me and, you know, I talked to her mom and you know, and they you know, they were taking her off life support and they lost her. And it just ruined my, like, I was just bawling like a 4-year-old. And my wife came in the room and she said, "Are you going to be okay?" And she said, "Cause I think you should go home." And I said, "I think I need to go home." And that's when we got this thing rolling. And, we did this concert and the hockey players were so freaking good. I'm telling you, Gallagher, Shea Weber, you know what a stud he is. Monahan, these guys come, you know, that are the current guys. Then you get Lanny McDonald and Paul Coffey and Sakic and Medano and Wendell and Trottier. You know, you get all of these great guys, these great personalities, and they all show up. And they come to Saskatoon, and we told them we were going to, you know, kind of meet them. They didn't know what hockey players were coming. And we were in a boardroom attached to the boardroom they were in, and they opened those big sliding bifold doors, and we gave them a standing ovation. And there was billet families and a couple of the boys that were in the accident and stuff like that were there. I don't know. There was a few hundred people besides us, 50 hockey players or whatever there was. And Biz, I got to tell you, man, it was so freaking emotional what happened and the fact that these people were, you could just see, but it was almost like a healing process for everyone, but you could see where they were like, holy shit, this isn't all talk. These guys showed up and then the next day we had the concert the next night. And like I said, there's no playbook for it, but I think it had a huge impact for everyone. And it's a small thing, but I think the players did the right thing.
Yeah, and I, you know, personally, I want to tell you just an amazing job by you, because as you say, there's no playbook. But when things like that, you know, happen, you were able to kind of get everything going in terms of helping people that went through this horrible tragedy. And you yourself were a part of it, knowing these people and these kids. So credit to you for really helping out those guys, because down the line, I think families and those players will say Kelly Chase was there and helped a lot of us with going through that awful, awful tragedy. So great job by you, and well, we can't thank you enough for coming on. We'd love to have you on again, get some more Holly stories.
Yeah, we haven't even touched on him, but I got to tell you this. One of the things that I like, it's not a humble brag. It's sort of an awkward thing. There were so many people that did so much. Now, you know, myself, Paul Hoffer, and Nick Namina got the Humanitarian Award for the Country Music Awards, and they were just in Hamilton, and we got this award, and I said, you know, when I was speaking, it doesn't seem right that you're getting, you know, you're being recognized when there were so many people that did so much, and it doesn't feel like it's a, you know, it was almost like, geez, I didn't really feel comfortable going up and talking on us, and I love to talk, but I can tell you, I was really like humbled by it, but yet, you know, there's so many damn people that deserve a pat on the back. It was like, you know, you don't know how, you know what I'm trying to say. It's just one of those freaking things where
you're just where you don't know what to say for them.
Yeah, right. You know, it was great. Oh, we put the concert together. Well, we're supposed to. Well, you guys did the right thing. Well, we're supposed to. It's like you wear a jersey in the NHL, man. You have an obligation to give back. And I don't know, Biz, do you remember that? Did you see that thing that's on the door that we wrote about? It's a privilege. Did you see that?
Yeah, it's not a right. It's a privilege. Absolutely.
Yeah, we have an alumni locker room in St. Louis for the guys that, because when you leave the game, you don't miss the game. You miss the guys, right? You miss.
That's why I jumped on this podcast.
Right, that's exactly right. You know, but I mean, that's sort of how that's our mentality. That's what we think. So, you know, what I say all the time is I wrote this thing that's on the alumni door, and I honestly said this to kind of wrap it up, but I think this speaks the same of all the hockey players. But it says, through these doors walk the shoulders of men who have bled, sweated, broke bones, tore muscles, and shed tears for the right to enter this room. They enter this room with pride yet humble, for they know all they have they owe to the game, and the game owes them nothing, and they know that God will not judge them for their trophies, medals, degrees, or diplomas, but for what they gave back. And these men know you don't win by or wish your way through these doors. You earn it. And when you do, you understand it's a privilege. Wow. And it is a privilege. That's, I believe that.
That is I hadn't heard that, if that's what you were asking me. No, I never heard that. Did you?
I mean, I've never seen that. Just the fact that you're able to recite it from memory is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's very impressive.
That's powerful, and it just does remind you. I mean, you're talking about Gretzky before. The guy's got all the awards, all the MVPs. He's the great one, but he treats people with respect, and he knows that the game gave him everything, and he gives back, and that's just crazy.
He's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we've got to – if you like – you know, punch into the Alumni Association, punch yourself into to what is going on with the alumni and what Glenn Healy is now the director and what we got going. Like, you know, make yourself included, because I'll tell you what, there's a lot of good things coming with the Alumni Association. I think that we kind of scatter and we go our own ways, but then now finally we've got stability in there of guys helping one another and looking after one another and doing the right things. And I think more often than not, there's a greater amount of guys willing to help because they played the game and they have their values in check than any other sport. And I'm not just saying that because I played the game, but I think it's pretty common knowledge that there's a hell of a lot of giving going on with the hockey players if you can get them together.
Well, Chaser, I actually spoke with them, and we talked about getting a lot of these older guys on the podcast because, you know, now that they're not in the limelight, they think people, you know, oh, I'm older, they don't care about me. Man, I love, and the fans love, hearing you guys come on and talk about all these old stories, if not more than these younger guys. So we got to get more of you guys involved. Like some of the stories you told, like the fucking Gosser one about Gretzky putting out, that's insane. Now saying
that, Glenn Healy is so funny. We got to get him.
He already said he was going to come on.
Perfect.
No, I love him. And you know what? We had a little, we had an opportunity last year to hire him, and it was the right thing to do. And we put a guy in place now that we have a business we're running now. It's not a freaking, you know, we're not shaking hands and, you know, good give back. We're going to give back. We're going to help guys, you know, sort out situations that they have that weren't taken care of in the old days, that built the foundation of the game. And Glenn's the one that's leading the charge, and he's doing a hell of a job.
Chaser, one last thing. Can we get one Hully story, and then that'll seal it off and give the fans a chuckle before we end this one?
Where are we going with Hully? What's the
just a memorable one for you?
Just a one when he's being cocky, but yet
I love cocky.
His cocky stories are the funniest shit.
Hully, let me see. Let me give you. I'll give you the LA story. He's not allowed on the ice, and at the end of games, like Sutter wouldn't put him on the ice because he didn't think he'd play defense. So he would just leave him on the bench, and we were winning 2-1. And he had one already, and it's like 5 minutes left in the game, he's just sitting there, and down to 3 minutes left in the game, 2 minutes, he's not playing, 30 seconds left in the game, or whatever it was, a minute left in the game. We get scored on, they make it 2-2, and Brian's pissed, and Hully snaps, he jumps over the boards, and he goes out on the ice, and Brian's yelling at him from the bench to get the hell back to the bench, and he's just ignoring him. He's got his back to him, and he tells Richie Sutter and Bassin and Lowry, get out there. And Richie comes up to the face-off, and Richie's like, Hully, go on. He goes, fuck off, Richie. And next thing you know, Koharski's like, hey, one of you guys off the ice. And he goes, Richie, I'm not going off the fucking ice. So fucking Richie has to go to the bench because we're going to get too many men on the ice. And Hully's out there doing pirouettes, doing nothing, and Cujo's got to make about 3 or 4 saves. And all of a sudden, the puck goes behind the D on the left side, and he's kind of coming in the middle of the ice. He gets the puck. It's a half one-on-one. I don't remember if it was Gary Galley or Doug Bodger, but all of a sudden, he just freaking gets the puck, turns to the middle of the ice, and the D's kind of like caught between, should I go backwards or skate forwards with him? And as soon as he goes backwards, he just wheels into the middle of the ice and just guns a snapper. Kelly Rudy's kind of guessing a little bit. It goes over Kelly's shoulder, and there's about 12 seconds left in the game, and it's 3-2 Blues. And Hully comes to the bench. He doesn't let anybody congratulate him, and he just puts his foot over the board, and he goes, fuck, like we're playing overtime in L.A.
Oh, Chaser, thank you so much.
Oh, man. Hey, fuck, already had the Rezzo booked, eh? The table for
him and Gretz had shit booked at Sunset Boulevard, boys. It was over.
Hey, Kelly, thank you so much. Will you come on again later in the year? We can shoot the shit again.
Anytime, boys. Take care.
We appreciate it so much. This has been awesome, and I think the fans will love this. So thank you.
You're going to love it.
That interview was also brought to you by Trip Actions. There's a reason half of business travelers do not use their company's chosen travel management platform. Booking business travel and just getting where you need to go is still ridiculously outdated, it's time-consuming, and it's costly. Trip Actions takes the pain out of corporate travel management with a complete solution that helps businesses save and keeps employees happy, because it's the first travel management platform designed from the ground up with the road warrior in mind. With easy booking from app or desktop, 24/7 proactive support around the globe, and incentives for employees to save on travel expenses, companies large and small see over 90% adoption and save up to 34% on travel spend. On travel spend when they use Trip Actions. Companies from Lyft to Sara Lee's Frozen Bakery trust Trip Actions with their business travel. Trip Actions rewards travelers for saving company money, and they'll reward you for just checking them out. Reshape business travel at your company today. Go to tripactions.com/chicklets, attend a 30-minute demo, and you'll get a $100 Amazon gift card. But it's this month only. tripactions.com/chicklets for a free demo and a $100 Amazon gift card. Big thanks again to Kelly Chase for joining the show this week. I did neglect to mention earlier, he's in a fantastic documentary about pretty much the last generation of hockey fighters called Ice Guardians. We've mentioned it multiple times on the podcast. If you haven't checked it out yet, by all means do so. I think it's still on Netflix. Kelly has a pretty prominent role in that, so check it out. Paul, one thing I noticed, man, I've been looking at the standings, and you know, me and Witz have been saying you can't clinch a playoff spot in November, but you can certainly lose one. But you're taking a look at the standings right now, man. You have 24 teams within 8 points of each other right now. And you wonder, like, how many teams are going to be in the playoff bubble when, you know, February, March roll around? You could have potentially, like, almost every team in each conference within the playoff striking distance.
Well, I think that's what they wanted when they changed the points rule, of course, going to OT, get that extra point, keep the parity closer. At least teams are more in the playoff hunt later in the season. That's going to correlate to more ticket sales. But, I mean, just the explosion of talent and skill nowadays, you got kids popping out of nowhere. And, I mean, there's fucking highlight reel goals now every night. I mean, I don't even know the kid's name in Anaheim who scored the other night. You might wit.
Pontus Aberg.
Yeah, and no offense to him, but like, these kids are coming out of nowhere. And just, you know, the game, to me, this is the most I've noticed the change, where is there's barely any hitting anymore, but there's a shit ton of flow. And fuck, boys, I hate to say it, sometimes it's a little more exciting to watch. Obviously, in games that are a little more sluggish and there's like no offense, no hitting, no nothing. But man, like some of these games the Coyotes have been playing, it's fun out there. I know there's not much fighting or physical play, but just the skill and talent level has been exciting to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, it used to be there was always a couple really shitty teams. You know, like this team's gonna get pounded tonight. Like I remember my rookie year in Pittsburgh, most of the year we were just trash. Now it doesn't seem like there's anyone that's that bad. I mean, like all these teams that people thought were going to suck before the year, like Ottawa and Montreal, I mean, they've played well. So there's, you know, Buffalo's playing good. They were kind of a doormat for like a little while. And it just seems like you say, because there's so much more pace involved as opposed to hitting and things like that. I mean, every team is now stacked with enough skilled guys to compete and have nights where they're going to beat, you know, a good majority of the league. So when teams get going good and their pace is good and they have a team that's fast, like you're not going to see many fast teams struggle nowadays because you can control the pace. So it has changed, but it's for the better, 100%. I mean, you want as many teams in the hunt as you know, March and April come as possible, because it only makes those last few games of the year more exciting. When everything's locked up with six games to go, it's like, this sucks. Just get us to the playoffs.
Well, I mean, even now in the Western Conference, the last three teams are Vegas, St. Louis, and Los Angeles. Like, I would have had those all bubble teams. It's really early. There's only excuse me, RA, for chirping you, and now I'm coughing.
What the fuck, Biz?
I know. I think you gave me a cold over the mic. That's how bad you're coughing.
A cyber cold.
Oh, you know, that reminds me quick. Can I quickly tell you what I want to invent or somehow have? Is
yep.
You could ever text someone a fart. Imagine just open a text like, and you're just like, oh. Imagine if that could ever come in existence.
Even like, the
you
smell?
Open your phone. It's just, yeah, like somehow through the phone, it's like, poof. And like hot air hits your face, and it's just a smell of a terrible fart.
Well, yeah, just
bury your. You have to pay for each one.
Yeah, call it the Pink Eye app.
Granelli's talking to a girl at the bar. I'm gonna crush him right now with my fart text.
Yeah, give him. It's called the Pink Eye app. Just fart right in the face, but you know, the skill level was more just, you know, me kind of rambling on off the parody now, but just it's
true.
Highlight real goals every night. Hartman had one. Beauty against who'd they score? He scored against Vegas, I believe. So check that one out if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, basically, like every team has either a star or a budding star right now. It seems like every team has somebody worth paying money to go see. Like even if the team stinks, it's like, all right, you know what? If I can go on SeatGeek and get a nice cheap ticket, I'm gonna do that because you know they got a great team worth watching, or a great player worth watching.
Ask me a team right now, and I'll just give you a quick name. Give me any team. I'll give you the guy worth paying to go see.
Edmonton Oilers.
Connor McDavid.
Nice. Math guy. You're diversified now.
Give me another one.
Calgary Flames.
Matthew Tkachuk.
Minnesota Wild.
Jared Spurgeon, the most underrated defenseman in the NHL. Oh, ooh. By the way, how about Ryan Suter? I just pumped his tires filthy and then
posterized.
Someone wrote me like, hey, how much of an idiot do you feel pumping? Or tough time to pump his tires. I in my head, I don't respond. I just said, in my head, I said, shut up. I don't feel like an idiot at all. It's McDavid. He does it to everyone. The guy's
everyone.
1,000 games. I don't feel like an idiot at all. You're an idiot.
Are you chirping Twitter people on through
the guy
podcast?
Called me an idiot. No, I don't feel like an idiot.
He did posterize Sutter, but.
Oh, who doesn't? I mean, who doesn't he posterize?
Or it's Suter.
He's doing stuff. I haven't seen anyone do the stuff McDavid's doing. When he gets the puck, I think his skating with the puck, I swear, I think it's similar to Bobby Orr. I think this is what Bobby Orr looked like skating with the puck. And he's that much faster than everyone else when he has it.
That's a good comparison.
And I've never really seen this before. He's just gliding by guys. Or he's getting his feet going and just completely smoking D-men who can wheel and pivot. He's smoking them wide. And I've never seen it. Like it's sick. I want to watch every Oilers game.
Hey, boys, before we go any further, I want to talk to you about Potbelly for a second. I was in Potbelly the other day grabbing a cheesesteak, and man, people are crazy about the cheesesteak. People are either pro Cheese Whiz or no Cheese Whiz, or they like the provolone or no provolone. I mean, it's a big to-do at Potbelly right now. I'm not sure if you're aware of it. Big old brawl. If you go to a Potbelly Twitter, there's a clear divide. You got to hear some of the tweets. I mean, Jofus Boy says, replace my blood with cheddar Cheese Whiz, which is repulsive, man. I don't know how you want that stuff. I'm a provolone guy. Matt Kroska says, provolone, that shit will get you cut in Philly. So that's not a surprise. Philly city of gritty that they'd cut you over cheese. No shock there. Winosaurus Rex says, thinly sliced ribbons of magical beef on bread. Why ruin with whiz? I'm agreeing with Winosaurus Rex, and Notorious P.I.G. tweeted, what kind of fucking degenerate gets it with provolone? Well, I'm that kind of degenerate, Notorious P.I.G. A little provolone on the steak, you got to love it. Okay, right now at Potbelly, you can defend your taste turf by getting your favorite cheese stick with whiz or provolone. You're going to vote with your mouth and see how this goes, okay? They got both there for a limited time, so stop in, choose your cheese steak at Potbelly, folks. I'm sorry, choose your cheese steak at Potbelly, folks, and let the best topping win.
Speaking of other superstars, Sid, since that Canadian swing, the start of it at least against Toronto, 5 games, 6 goals, 6 assists for 10 points, so he is starting to heat up. I guess my last question to you, R.A., before we throw it off to the All Right Hamilton. How do you feel about the Simpsons kiboshing the Apu character? This is serious shit, man.
What?
He's done.
The Quickie Mart?
Oh, sweet Manjula. I can't believe it happened. Am I going to get in trouble now for doing that?
No.
I mean, apparently, like, what the fuck, man? He's an immigrant, came over here.
What did he get sent back? They sent him home? They deported him?
No, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to write him into the script, but people are complaining, so they're going to be basically forced to kick him off the show, which I think is bullshit.
Apu Nahasapima Petalon is going to be a character no more on The Simpsons. Yeah, they're going to, I guess, just write him out. What's it? This comedian, Harry Condablu. I think he's Indian American, and he made a documentary about basically how a white guy played an Indian guy on The Simpsons for the last 25 years. Now, of course, when The Simpsons came out in 1990, the whole idea of somebody playing another race or ethnicity wasn't really a big deal. It wasn't like a major thing. But in the last several years, there's been a lot of attention paid to it, however you might feel about it. I personally saw the documentary. I don't think he made a very convincing case. I got picked on as a kid with it, which, you know what, every kid got picked on. And if you got compared to a cartoon character, it's probably not the worst thing. I thought he lost his whole argument when they interviewed his mother and she said, "Oh, I call him a poo." I thought that blew his whole fucking argument out. Like, your own mother, like, calls you a poo for a joke. I know people can be oversensitive, and I'm a white guy. I'm not going to tell somebody who's a minority or a brown person how to feel and not feel. I just didn't think it was like a very compelling argument that, you know, this should be done away with. It was a guy acting. But times have changed, man. People have a voice that didn't have a voice years ago. The social media has amplified some of those voices. Like I said, I heard the guy out. I watched his documentary, and I just thought, hey, man, you know, for all the kids that and shit that kids get when they get picked on as little kids, it was just like, dude, it's a cartoon character. Like, no one's really insulting you. And they also said, he's gouges people and all that. It's like, dude, he's a store owner. Anyone who owns a fucking convenience store gouges people. It's not like.
Well, you also are from Boston. Okay. So like, I think a lot more store owners are gouging people than in other states. I mean, I think we all agree on that, right, guys? I mean, everyone in Boston has a bookie.
Ooh,
like, your mom probably has a bookie.
Probably. She's just betting against me every time, too. That's why she's buying new houses and
shit. She's your bookie. You don't even know it.
Hashtag
Mom, favorite. Where'd you get this new, house? Like, oh, nowhere. Don't worry about it.
I don't care about the show. I mean, no offense, RA, but it's just like, holy crap, when does it end? Like, what's wrong with the janitor? I mean, are people
the
pissed off?
The janitor's done, too?
Grunsky,
no,
Jack Scottish dude?
Yeah, no, of course he gets to say, but I'm saying, what's the difference? Like, you're saying he's Scottish and he's basically a drunk, right? Is he not a drinker on the show?
Oh, I think he gets crushed.
There's an animal alive that can outrun a Grease Scotsman.
Let's move on.
Of The Simpsons and not fucking.
No, I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
Yeah, it's horse shit, man, but whatever. It's the fucking world we live in now. All right. This week's All Right Hamilton, we submitted questions related to everybody's favorite holiday this time of year. It's not really a holiday, but Halloween. All right, boys, let's kick it off with the first question. And it is from at NARC311. And he asks, have any of you ever got some tail in a Halloween costume? And what costume was it you did it in?
All right, Hamilton.
So basically, if you ever got some ass at Halloween, what costume was it?
Oh, is that what getting tail means?
You guys are fucking waiting, hesitating. I was thinking.
I never even really dressed up.
Really?
Unless I got, I didn't really. Unless I got worked when I was like 11, dressed up as like a Power Ranger. No, I don't. I know. I never did.
Not at any of these teen parties, or did you always have a date at the teen parties?
No, I probably just got crippled and just went home alone.
Yeah, well, you were in Pittsburgh, and then what about in Anaheim? You didn't have a girlfriend at the time?
In Anaheim, no, I didn't. I don't remember a Halloween party when I was in Anaheim.
Boys, there's a story I can't really get into. It was when I was with the Coyotes, and I ended up bringing a Playboy Playmate to one of them. I was Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and she ended up getting too shit-faced, so I had to bring her home in a car. It kind of sucked. I was excited for that one, but the night didn't end very well. That's all I can say about it.
I got laid in a Winnie the Pooh costume one time.
In a what costume? A Pooh costume?
A Winnie the Pooh costume.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, that's the best I can
bring. What were you wearing under there? You must have been sweating your balls off, too, in that costume.
Oh, yeah.
Nice, Grinnelli, getting a little tail in the old Winnie the Pooh costume. I think of one night up college. I didn't close the deal, but I used to have this green leisure suit. It was kind of like – it was a legit suit my uncle wore, and I used to just wear it to parties all the time with, like, this big Afro wig, and I hooked up with this chick, and she was dressed up as a pregnant nun. So if you happen to look at the right time at a party, you'll see me in like a big pimp suit making out with a pregnant nun at a party. So that was that. Hey, know what the funniest thing in Halloween is? Is when two guys get in a fight and they're dressed in costumes, and one guy's like dressed in like a hooker, and another guy's dressed like some random kid character and they're fucking knocking the shit out of each other. It's too funny.
We'll probably see some on Barstool's Instagram tomorrow.
Exactly.
And have you guys, hey, does it feel like it's been Halloween for over a week?
Yeah, it does. You know why? It's because when it's in the middle of the week, you celebrate it like the weekend before. Like
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, yeah. Sunday, and also, then of course now.
And also the funniest, the best part about Halloween, at least when I lived in the city in college and stuff, is just seeing girls on the Walk of Shame in the Halloween costume. It's the best thing in the world. I might drive into Southie at like 7 a.m. to like tomorrow morning, just like drive around with a Starbucks coffee, be like, oh, look at Snow White. She got worked.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, work.
Give him the Spit and Chicklets Instagram. You can put them on the stories.
Oh my god, be like, oh, who crushed Oprah?
Oprah. Ugh. Who goes to Halloween as Oprah?
A lot of people. You want to be a billionaire?
Yeah. A little bit. All right. I got the next one here. This is from @WojTweets. Not that Woj. If Torts had a dress up for Halloween, what would he be?
All right, Hamilton.
I would say the Dos Equis guy because he's got that. He's always got that tan.
Good answer, Paul.
You know what I mean? Well,
yeah.
I think he's the most interesting man in the world, right?
The most
man in the world.
I think he goes to the same spray tan guy as Wit does.
Oh no, nah, his still stays on.
No, his doesn't come off in clumps.
He's got the Chris Chelios, the permatan.
I could see him being like the what was the dude's name? The real badass bad guy dojo guy from Karate Kid. The guy who was like, sweep the leg.
Miyagi.
Miyagi was the good guy. It was the other guy.
The other guy had blonde hair, though, didn't he?
Yeah, he was a psychopath. Like, he wanted them to snap ACLs and stuff.
Nello Ferreira had to his house and had to his wedding.
Yeah, it was. You're right.
Yeah. He invited him to this underground bar that he opened up in Chicago, too. And they're, like, best friends now.
I don't know anything about that guy, whoever the actor's name is, but I feel like that actor probably ripped up the 80s. Like, I can see him in a red Corvette.
He's still in the 80s.
Flying.
The character.
He's still there.
He doesn't even, he's never left.
Yeah.
The character, it was Kreese. That was the character's name, Wits and Karate Kid, Kreese. Martin Cove was the actor who played him. He was actually in our First Blood Part 2. You must have been a Rambo fan, no, Wits?
No, I've never seen Rambo. Also, dude, that's when the guy. Miyagi convinced him to punch him and he broke both car windows and his knuckles were bleeding everywhere. I don't know if that was one or two, but yeah, I could see Torts being that guy.
Okay. So we're kind of getting on the movie talk. Let me ask you guys a question. We're getting off topic a little bit.
It's all right.
Who's the one character that has played someone so bad, like so well, but it's a bad character where you fucking hate their guts in real life?
Oh, so you hate
Penelope Cruz and Blow to me. Like, I hate Penelope Cruz because of that role. I'll never look at her the same.
You mean the acting was excellent, so good that you hate the person because they acted so well?
Yeah, because she did that to her guy, and he provided her with a good life, and she threw him under the bus, and he went to prison for it. I hate her guts.
I got out under the similar way. Sharon Stone in Casino, man. She was so fucking evil in that movie. She was awesome in it, too, but you absolutely fucking hated her because she was so evil.
Good answer.
Oh, my God, dude.
Think of one?
I hate how I'm so bad under the trigger.
How about this? You get some time to think and we'll go to the next subject.
Because I know I have people that I'm like, I fucking hate this person so much. Like, I hate this character so much. I'll think of one.
All right. Okay. I hadn't given my answer for Torch. So my answer would be, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Wade Garrett.
Who's that?
You saw Roadhouse, right?
Nope.
Swayze, you never saw Roadhouse? Grinnelli?
I haven't seen it either, but we're in that age group where we should have already seen it.
Yeah, I mean,
I think Roadhouse is pretty well. I think most of the mob would be behind RA on this one, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that was Sam Elliott. He was Patrick Swayze's mentor as a bouncer. So basically, John Tortorella could probably play any role that Sam Elliott played because of the gray hair, a little similar features. So, okay, this one's kind of
I know big. Who it is. It's that fucking rat that
you don't have to whisper. He's not going to hear you.
It's the guy who in the Shawshank Redemption who was the warden.
Warden.
Oh, dude. Wow.
Great answer out of left field. Woo!
Dude, that guy, I just hated his guts so much. So does that mean, and would you guys say, if you hate somebody that much, that means no matter what, that's incredible acting? For them to get you to hate them, that is incredible acting, right?
Wait, absolutely.
That's like you're at Starbucks with your wife and kid, and he's in line behind you, and you're like, you see him, and you're like, you turn back around, you're like, I'm going to say something.
Yeah.
She's like, don't fucking say anything. I know you hated him in that movie. And you turn around, listen, you fucking asshole. You're a piece of shit. He's like, what? I saw you in Shawshank Redemption, you piece of shit. I saw what you did. Fuck. And like security's bringing you out.
I saw you gun down that guy that knew that Andy was innocent.
I think every fucking guy who got divorced in the 70s hates Meryl Streep too, from Kramer versus Kramer. Dustin Hoffman get divorced. It was a divorce movie when divorce became like a big thing in America.
How old are you?
Me, I'm 46.
So you're about 10 years older than me. I think that 10 years was a huge difference.
Yeah.
I really do. I feel like the 10 years between you and me is way different than me and a 26-year-old in terms of movies and like current event stuff.
All good. That would be me.
It's you're dead in the middle between me and RA.
Yeah, and I think unless you were an old soul and you were watching like old shit, but maybe that was what's cool.
I will say this though, RA is also a big movie guy, so it bumps.
Oh yeah, you know, you've seen a lot of movies, so that actually changes a lot too.
Yeah, but I think if you took an average poll of guys my age, like my friends or whatever, I think most of them probably would know Kramer versus Kramer. But this is the whole genesis of Ask a Millennial. There was the difference between us and, you know, my generation. But all right, anyways, go ahead, Biz.
And let me put it this way. Roadhouse is my old man's favorite movie. And my old man's, I think, 73 now.
Oh, so, there we go. Oh,
so, like, no offense, RA, but...
No, I'm gay. Watch Twitter. How many fucking people are dumb?
Oh yeah, we're gonna get torched for this one, Whit.
Absolutely. All right, last question. This for you two more specifically, and this is from C Josephine 28. What's the most money you've seen or heard a player spend on their Halloween costume or makeup?
All right, Hamilton.
Oh,
it's got to be an obscene amount.
I'd say 1,000.
Yeah. That's it? You know what though? I was saying just the other day, it's this. The past couple years since I've been out of the NHL, it's really blown up to where guys are having professional makeup stuff done. I don't remember that as big when I was playing. I remember like Shattenkirk last year did the Ice King, or what is it, the Night King from Game of Thrones. It must have taken 3-4 hours and cost, I would say, over $1,000. But I haven't heard any numbers really above what Biz said.
Yeah, I mean, people would get professional like face painting and stuff, and yeah, sure, a costume, but I mean, Christ, how much more can you spend? I mean, $1,000, that's a lot of money on something you're gonna wear one night.
Yeah, and I think you should have a little more creativity. I think it's too easy to like write a check and just have somebody make you up. You gotta put a little more effort into it, I think. No,
hey, okay, so what's the last costume you wore, RA? And like, we're talking when you actually dressed up, put some thought into it, and tried, and you walked into that party thinking, I'm gonna be the jaw dropper tonight. I'm bringing home the cake for best outfit.
It's no secret because I've talked about it on the show before. Only because it was the last one I wore was when I went as Travis Bickle, taxi driver, and it was so long ago. I actually had enough hair to give myself a mohawk, so it's been a long time. But my favorite going back to college was I was a Hare Krishna. I shaved my whole head except I left one ponytail You know, Hare Krishnas, they used to be at the airport. They would have like I guess I dressed up with a bed sheet around me. There was some kind of crazy religion back in the 70s. No. And they were known for like hanging out at airports, handing out literature and shit. Have you seen the movie Airplane? You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, so are they extinct? Like, do they still have that religion, or you just don't see them around anymore?
I think they may. There's probably still factions of them, but they were very well known in like the 1970s and 80s. And anyways, they had this like kind of fucking like tunic type thing on, which basically I got a peach colored bed sheet and wrapped myself in it. And you had to leave like one strand of hair coming out. It almost looked like a high ponytail. I did that one night. And then the next night I said, well, I'm not going to fucking wear the same costume twice in a row. The next night I totally shaved my head. First time I ever did. And I borrowed my buddies, like, you think I dress bad, Wits? My roommate at college dressed like a fucking detective. So I put all his clothes on. And I just sucked on a lollipop and went as Kojak all night and fucking.
I will say this. You dress poorly enough where I see a lot of comments about it. But it's like, it's you. It's all you, baby.
Well, you know what's funny to it? And
you I bought a new suit, right?
Yeah, it is so. I was looking. I had to get it for a funeral, and I had it on yesterday. And I wanted. I wanted to have my wife take a picture. And be like, send this to these idiots. But it was for a funeral, and it didn't feel right. Like fucking showing off my look for my buddy's funeral. But you know, like I said, when I have to look good, I look good.
He's got a white tuxedo.
Well, no, I get the pink, like, oh, the orange one, like Dumb and Dumber.
Dumb and Dumber one was like half off. This would be perfect.
Boys, even
orange and Halloween's tomorrow. This is great.
This week's All Right Hamilton is brought to you by Quip. One of the most important things we do for our health every day is brushing our teeth. Yet most of us don't do it properly. Quip is a better electric toothbrush created by dentists and designers. Quip was designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and even enjoyable. I've been using Quip for a while now, man, and it does. It's a total game changer. It's way better than just using your old traditional brush that falls apart. You're spitting out bristles, all that garbage. Doesn't happen with Quip. It's got the nice sensitive sonic vibrations. It tells you when to flip to the other side. People brush too hard sometimes, but you don't have that problem with Quip. It's got a built-in two-minute timer, lets you know to switch every 30 seconds because 90% of people don't brush for the full two minutes they're supposed to, or they don't do it evenly. Plus, you got a multi-use cover that can guide, a multi-use cover that you can mount to your mirror and unmounts the slide, protects your brush wherever you go, if you're on the travel, on the run, whatever, boom, works perfect. Brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. Why? Because 3 out of 4 of us use bristles that are old, worn out, and ineffective. Quip is also one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the ADA and has thousands of verified 5-star reviews. That's the American Dental Association if you're scoring at home. All right. Again, I love Quip because I don't like the old ratty toothbrushes, bristles falling out. You get the free ones from your dentist. They last for about a week. Not the same thing with Quip. So what you want to do, you want to save $25. I'm sorry. You want to save $25. Go to getquip.com/chicklets. You'll get your first refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/chicklets.
Boys, I think we're close to our 2-hour mark, which
what?
Yeah, everyone seems to like that length. No. Kelly Chase ran a little long, which is a good thing because he had some awesome Hull stories. So thank you to him. RA, what else you got? Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's about it. Anything we didn't get to today is, you know, evergreen. We can get to it next episode.
Yeah, and everyone, if you're listening to this for 2 hours, thank you. That's incredible. I can't believe people will actually listen to us for 2 hours. I'm not kidding either. That's a long time. So thank you, guys. We love you. And, guys, I'll see you, what is it, Sunday night.
See you, boys.
Everybody, have a great weekend. Be safe.